The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Wake up, Atlanta.
You heard the man.
This is the morning shift.
You heard
the man. I am Squid
Billy. Can't help but hear the man.
The All-American National Champion. Hey, congratulations. Happy anniversary.
Thank you very much.
I'm sorry that I missed it yesterday.
All good.
I deeply apologize. I do not keep up with the anniversaries of Alabama National Championships.
Yeah,
but
no worries.
But I did feel a little bit of a certain way that I missed knowing it yesterday.
I don't expect you to know what part of January the Rose Bowl in 2010 was played on, so no worries there.
Well, I remember a lot about that Rose Bowl.
Do you?
Well, I remember a little bit about the game, and then I remember kind of where I was at, who I was watching
where
with.
I like hearing stories like this. Where were you?
No. That was a
I bet I can guess where you're at
that
now.
That was a previous life.
Okay.
I watched it with an ex.
Okay.
Because that was before. Enough. Amy and I.
That's all right. Look, dude,
I don't know.
My ex was at the game, so it's all good.
I hadn't even met Amy yet.
So was my current wife. She was at the game, too, just not in the same capacity that we are now.
Did she go with her mom to that game? Because I know her mom's. I know Lindsay's mom's a big Roll Tide fan.
Big Bama fan.
Yeah.
They went to the game together. They were out there, and you've been to the Rose Bowl before, right? It's have you ever been there?
I've never been to the past. I've never been to the Rose Bowl. In fact, it's a bucket list, and I know some people.
There's nothing like it.
I think even Randy Cross and I had the conversation about because he's obviously he played at UCLA.
Yeah,
and it's from what I've been told, it is. There's no experience like it.
It's not.
As a player, as a fan, as a media member. However, it is a dump in some areas of it as far as like the concourses from what I hear. And it's super expensive.
I know they've redone a lot of it.
Well, now this is going off a few years ago, too.
Yeah.
But I know it's super expensive to be a fan there.
Yeah.
But there's iconic venues in the sports world. I grew up, and I don't want to go off on too much tangent, but I grew up watching a lot of NFL and college football.
Right.
And so I always wanted to go to Lambeau when it snowed. I always wanted to go to a game at in Buffalo.
Orchard Park.
Yeah, yeah, when it was cold. I've always wanted to go. The Coliseum was a small one for me just because it was of the name, and I used to watch USC play there a little bit, and I watched the Raiders play when Bo Jackson was there. Pasadena is one I have not checked off, and really want to.
Is it one of those things where, because you're a Florida fan, is it one of those things, because this is how I feel about going to Omaha for the College World Series. I want to go to Omaha for the College World Series, but I want to do it when Bama is in the College World Series. Like, that's kind of my thing. Like, if Bama makes it the College World Series ever, I'll make the trip to Omaha. Is that how you feel about the Rose Bowl?
No. If you came to me December of next year, or Mike Conti came in December and said, look,
we're gonna go live.
None of this would ever happen. The Rose Bowl wants to send a show out there, but you and Mike have to do like a 4-hour show leading into the Rose Bowl, I'd be like, okay,
done.
It's to me, because I remember the Super Bowl, 27, I believe it was, where the Cowboys played the Bills out there, and Michael Jackson does the halftime show, and
you remember? No,
yeah,
you don't remember that.
Yeah, it was 1992. I was 9 or 10. It's 93 by then, so I was 10. Oh, I was going to turn 10. Yeah, I remember it because I remember Michael Jackson's.
That's wild.
That's the Leon Lett play.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right.
So, yeah.
I do want to catch people up just a little bit. Yesterday was 15 years since I played in the BCS. It wasn't the Rose Bowl. The Rose Bowl was the venue. They actually played the actual Rose Bowl a week before that. But the BCS National Championship game was 15 years ago yesterday that I played in against Colt McCoy, Texas Longhorns. So obviously there was some stuff going on social media and was able to celebrate with some of my peers a 15-year anniversary.
Okay, we're about to hit the front page, but before we do.
What?
I need two things from you.
Okay.
One, I need your memory that stands out.
Okay.
Of that game.
Okay.
So, and then after that, I want to know how your NASCAR driver bracket is going.
Real quick, best memory of that game, I had a knockdown pancake block on a blitz, on a stunt. Roderick McElroy, I think, was a linebacker. Sam Acho, the defensive lineman. Cannot remember for the life. Maybe Blake Gideon was the safety at the third level. They ran a weak side stunt into an inside zone. Communicated it with our left tackle, who was James Carpenter, former Falcon, actually still lives in the area. We picked it up perfectly on a twist that they tried to run up front because the weak side blitz. And Trent Richardson hit his head on the goalpost untouched 40 yards later. It was when you get circled by Kirk Herbstreit in a national title game and he says, hey, watch this guy. There's nothing – for an offensive lineman, dude, that is bury me now. It gets no better than that.
Yeah.
So that was my best memory of that one. And the NASCAR poll and here's – so I put out obviously, if you haven't seen it on my social, at MPJohnson79 on X, I have a NASCAR new driver bracket. I'm trying to work my way bracket style as to who my new driver is going to be. Today's matchup was Chase Briscoe against Bubba Wallace. Bubba Wallace, I have a lot of respect for Bubba Wallace, drives for the 2311, new father, everything else. Chase Briscoe, though, he slides into the 19 seat that my old guy, Martin Truex Jr., vacated. I selected Chase Briscoe in that matchup today. So my question is to you on that, and I'll get into it later and mic'd up. Is it fair that I tag the drivers that win in this? I'm not usually the person that tags.
No,
athletes.
I don't like that.
Okay.
I don't like that. I think I can't stand it. I absolutely loathe it when a member of the media wants to talk about a team or a player and on Twitter
and tags them.
And tag them.
Yeah.
I've been going round and round about the tight end here. And for whatever reason, there's about five or six just on Twitter, which means there's, you know, 5 or 6 million defenders of the tight end. And there's about 50 million detractors who are like, what are we doing? Why are we defending? And I would never, because you know what?
Well, I think the negative stuff, yeah, I completely understand that.
I don't think you can tag the person that lost. Just don't tag them.
That's fair enough.
And the likelihood that they're going to see it, also they're going to be like,
who is this guy?
Why is this guy tagging me? Like, what? Mute, block, I don't care. Like, get away from me. I don't want to see that.
I don't know, man.
But I tell you what, there was something in the Hawks-Jazz game last night that you might want to see. Of course, you won't get to see it here. You'll get to hear it. Let's hit the front page.
We've got 8.8 to go. Hawks trying to win their second game on this six-game road trip. And now it's going to be put in play by Collier. And it's stolen by Dyson Daniels. Now they pick it up again. Sexton shoots a three and makes it. With 2.9 to go. Hawks don't have time. There's Trey. Midcourt fires. Bang! Trey Young just won the game. Trey Young just won the game, folks. Trey won from midcourt. He just stunned the silent crowd here in Utah. Trey Young from midcourt just knocked down a three, and the Hawks win. The Hawks win.
Dude, Trey Young, 24 points. 20 assists.
Yeah.
What was great is those are two guys that we expected to go to battle more. Remember, Colin Sexton was originally drafted out of Atlanta, went to Alabama, and originally drafted by the Cavs. And he goes and you said it when we were watching. We were going back and rewatching some stuff this morning from this game. You're like, dude, this is a great shot by Colin Sexton.
It was,
and it was.
It was a tipped ball by Dyson Daniels. And for anybody that hasn't kind of paid attention to what this matchup was supposed to be. This is. I'm pretty sure Utah has the worst turnover differential in the NBA. So, like, they're a team that's giving it away a lot. And Dyson Daniels with, 10 seconds left, less than 10 seconds left. They inbound the ball. He tips the ball. Colin Sexton on a broken play dribbles around up, outside the three-point line and drains a shot with 3 seconds left. Unbelievable. Like, in the grand scheme, the crowd is going bonkers. And Trae Young, unbeknownst to most people that were still celebrating in the crowd, dribbles up past.
That's so, the best part.
He didn't get past half court. It was before half court and throws up the buzzer beater. And, man, the look on the people's faces in that arena last night, stunned.
The best part is one of the broadcasts, I think I'm sure it was a Jazz broadcast. They're like, yeah, they're going to take a look at this. They're gonna take a look at this. And I'm like, dude, you let the ball go. The best part is it was 2.9 on the clock when the Hawks inbounded the ball. I think he shot it with like 1.9. I mean, it felt like no time off the clock.
Yeah.
But just phenomenal. The Hawks needed. I thought Mike Conte was on with Andy and Randy yesterday, and he had a really good point. He's like, we got to get out of this little bit that we're doing where a couple years ago the Hawks were win one, lose one, win one, lose one, win one, lose one. He goes, now it feels like we're win three, lose three, win three, lose three. So they did break, if I'm not mistaken, Dylan, a 3-game losing streak. Maybe they'll run three more off. It's just kind of weird that is what they're doing. But they're 19-18. They're road work. They've played 20 games on the road. They're 9-11. So they've got to improve on some areas. Need to run off. We really need this team to run off three or four. And if they're going to lose one, and then get back on a 3 or 4 game winning streak. By the way, Front Page is brought to you by Padley. Sell your home for cash fast. Padly, that's PadleyBuys.com. Look, moving to the next story, the Raiders have made a move. A day later, they make Antonio Pierce do the exit press conference with the media. Come back a day later, Mark Davis says, yeah, we're moving on.
Yeah, we thought a little bit further about this, and we actually don't want you to grind throughout the offseason and try to move this franchise forward. This one, it's because of them both being former players. I hate this for Antonio Pierce, and I hate this for Jerod Mayo, because I don't feel like either one of them were given the tools necessary to succeed at either one of these jobs. I don't feel like that about Jerod Mayo when you look at the money they put forth into this roster. And Antonio Pierce, when you look at what they were dealt with the quarterback position, I don't see it. And I know that Antonio Pierce was an interim and everything else under that job, and they played hard for him. Now, I think that Jerod Mayo was given a worse end of the stick. I think Antonio Pierce was given an opportunity. Jerod Mayo was promised an opportunity. So I'm not comparing the two, but
it was rough.
I feel
a little bit differently. I feel like Antonio, and I actually like Jerod Mayo a lot, but I feel like he was given a rookie quarterback and saying, you know, I tend to think it was show me a little something. The Raiders, to me, gave Antonio Pierce a real crappy end, because I don't know who was in – Tom Telesco is the GM out there. And I've heard that they were all in on three players in the draft in the first round, one of them being Brock Bowers. None of them were quarterbacks. But I almost feel like they were like, hey, go win with basically the new version of Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback,
right,
and Aiden O'Connell. And I don't think that was fair at all.
Yeah.
I don't – The misstep, Antonio, the one misstep I would say Antonio Pierce had, and I don't know if it's fireable or not because I wasn't in a building, but was when he was like, yeah, some guys are making business decisions. But I think that's a basis on who he is as that former player that we're going to call guys out and coach. So I don't necessarily think I want to hold that against him either.
Yeah, no, and it was tough, man. I think, look, when it comes down to these decisions, I try not to judge things from the outside, because you never know what was going on in the locker room. You don't know what the relationships were like. You don't know how many players were late for meetings or skipping rehab or being irresponsible or staying out on road trip. We don't know those things. And to me, if as an owner you look at it and those things have completely gone off the rails, then that's when it's time to probably fire a guy that's been a former player, because they're not getting people in line. So I don't know, man. I don't know what was going on behind the scenes, but obviously they felt like they had to move on.
All right, that's it for our Front Page. Look, coming up next, if you had to give a grade to the Falcons' wide receivers and quarterback rooms, what grade would you give?
I'll tell you.
All right, coming up next, Morning Shift Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, and
the Odyssey app.
We are back here on the Morning Shift, and did you know that you can listen to Sports Radio 92.9 The Game on your smart device? Just ask your smart device to play 92.9 The Game. Listening to The Game just got a lot easier. Powered by Dell Technologies, call 877-ASK-DELL. All right, we are rolling along here on the Morning Shift and handing out some off-season grades for the Atlanta Falcons wide receivers as well as quarterback. So when you look at Drake London, for example, you could start with him. Not sure what you guys are going to grade him out as, but him and Michael Penix able to be on the same page just in his three starts that Penix had this season.
So. Yeah, and he was on the same page with Kirk Cousins, until kind of whatever happened.
Kirk Cousins lost the book.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even know what to call it anymore. I keep hearing people try to talk about
things
it.
Things went off the rails.
Yeah,
that's what you could. That's a nice way to put it.
And it was a weird off the rails, as we talked about yesterday, where it was, I don't have it for two games. Oh, maybe I have it again. Oh no, you know what? It's way gone. Drake London as a solo, he is an A for me. He had a career year. This guy came in the season, I mean, into the season in his career, he had six touchdowns. He had nine this year. He had career games. Like last week, he had 187 yards on 10 catches, caught 100 passes, career high. I don't know how – I mean, he's got 241 catches for his career, Tiff. He had 100 of those this year.
So you guys went to training camp, and didn't you get to talk to him? Was he one of the guys?
We did get to talk to Drake.
Did he give any insight into what he was focusing on this season to try to improve?
Well – do you remember if he said anything in particular? Because I remember asking, that was like I had like two questions all training camp. I was like, I got to ask. Well, I mean, every guy had the same two questions, right? I asked, would you wear a Guardian cap? Which everyone.
Resoundingly no.
Including Drake.
Literally laughed.
Drake actually had the best answer.
Yeah,
he was like, no, this is a generation that gets called soft as NFL players. I'm not adding to that. I'm not wearing it. I was like,
that's
okay.
That's strong.
And I said, hey. I was like, you know, is there something you're working on? And he didn't really, I don't remember him saying anything in particular, but he did say this. He did say that an underrated part of his game was his fast twitchness and his ability to move in space. And you saw, and that's why I went here, because you asked that, because there's something that all the people want to come to me about Zach Robinson is or isn't. One thing he saw about Drake, and you've mentioned this multiple times, Mike, is he put Drake in different positions, including in that slot, and let him work out of that, and let Drake's route running ability, which he's a lot better of a route runner than people give him credit for, really come to fruition.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly what his answer was, Tiff, to that question, but I want to say it was something along the lines of creating more explosives. Because I think that, and we asked him about who was the fastest wide receiver or who was the fastest on the team or whatever it is, and he was like, it's definitely not me. He's like, I don't ever try to hide behind that and act like I'm fast. He was like, that's, you know, Darnell or one of these other guys. I'm with you. I think Drake London gets an A, because I think that what he's asked to do in this offense, he was exceptional at. I think that, you know, you look at Drake and we talk about the targets, the receptions he had. I think you would probably like in the end to create a little bit more space between him and the defender. And we mentioned over the last couple of days the tight coverage rate, but he also has like one of the better catch radiuses, in the NFL when it comes to tight coverage. And so he was really good at that. But just Drake London individually, if you want to focus on that, I think he definitely deserves an A for the season that he had, because he's catching this, he's a 1,000-yard receiver, but he's catching the tough balls across the middle. And he's not the go-route guy on the outside getting 1,000 yards.
Well, and you look at his stats, comparatively speaking, with other receivers in the league, wide receivers, just receivers in general, because, you know, Brock Bowers jumps in here. He's fourth in yards at 1,271 yards. He's ninth in receptions. I mean, so this is a guy who was picked eighth, and he's turned into a top 10 receiver. And, you know, the stat everybody wants to pull is, yeah, what about touchdowns? Okay, ninth. He's tied for ninth with nine touchdowns. So, you know.
That's a career high for him, right? It's got to be.
Yeah, he came. Yeah. Dude, he came into the season with six touchdowns.
For his career.
For his career.
Yeah.
In two seasons.
I remember talking about that after the Philly game when he scored the game winner. It's like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, he was completely unlocked by better quarterback play and an offensive coordinator who. And I don't even think you can – I don't think it's fair to say he was the focus of the offense in the passing game, because he was used early in the season almost as the tight end. He was making those contested catches over the middle, getting, you know, that eight – you need 7 yards, Drake catches it for nine, right? I mean, that's kind of the – I felt like his role was early in the season, and he grew and grew and grew in it.
Moving on to Darnell Mooney, a guy that Kirk Cousins did want to come here, right? Because he was on the practice squad, I believe, up in the Minnesota Vikings. So at least had some sort of relationship or experience with him. He finished the season with 992 yards, just 5 touchdowns, and only 64 receptions. But again, another guy here that, you know, maybe you'll see in the future with along with Drake London. And then Michael Penix being able to maybe unlock some more guys.
I don't think, and covered this a little bit yesterday, but I've dove even deeper into kind of what Darnell Mooney was. And to me, this is the biggest offseason addition. All apologies to week 1 through 6, Kirk Cousins. This was the biggest offseason addition. And we can talk about Drake, and the reason that Drake has an A on his report card for his season is Darnell Mooney. Darnell Mooney allowed Drake to slide in to the power slot role that Drake London provided for this team and allow him to be that guy that runs the slants and goes across the middle and has those tough contested catches on the deep crossing routes and things like that. Darnell Mooney brought a speed aspect and an over-the-top aspect this team just has not had in years. He's the fastest offensive player that I can remember them having in years since Julio. Right, I mean, it just is what it is. So Darnell Mooney being inserted into this, it's tough because I do feel like there are some connections down the stretch that I wish that Darnell and Michael Penix could have had, and even going back to Kirk Cousins' rough stretch. So it's hard to give Darnell anything other than an A because when I look at it, I think Darnell's doing everything to the best of his ability, but it doesn't always mean the outcome was the greatest outcome. So if I'm giving Drake London an A, I'm probably slotting Darnell Mooney somewhere around an A-, but still an extremely profitable year considering what you gave up for Darnell Mooney and just how he changed the dynamic of everything you were trying to get accomplished offensively.
Yeah, he had a 1,000-yard season once in his career, and it was, if I'm not mistaken, his second year. And so you go, and that was the conversation when they signed him. Yeah, this guy hasn't been very good. He's been injured the last couple years, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he doesn't have a career high in catches. His second highest catch total, his second highest yards total, the best average reception he's had in his career, the most touchdowns he's had in his career. And does he not get in? You know, he played banged up a lot of the season. This guy missed one game all year, and it happened to be last week against the Panthers, or Sunday against the Panthers. I don't know how you don't give him an A. He would have been a 1,000-yard receiver. He had 992 yards. Like you went from an offense that I don't did you throw for 3,000 yards or even 4,000? I'll say what, over maybe 3,500 yards as a team in 2023, and now you go do this. I don't know how Darnell Mooney doesn't get an A. The receivers weren't the problem on this team this year.
That's the thing, and I think when you're grading these guys, you kind of have to keep that in mind because it's like, are you grading what the passing game was, or are you grading the individual player getting the most out of themselves? Right? Are you grading Drake London against the rest of the receivers in the NFL, or are you grading Drake London off of past Drake London? And I think that's the conversation that everybody has to have individually when you're giving grades. But Darnell Mooney's right there. I mean, everything he was doing was exceptional this year. And I'm glad we're starting off with wide receivers because they're the easiest ones to grade, in my opinion. Like, they're by far the easiest ones to grade on the team because you look at them and they were exceptional for the vast majority of the season.
Very positive.
And we can come back to wide receivers if we run out of time here because we're going to hit quarterbacks at the top of the hour. But I do want to give you a chance to give some thoughts on Kadarrell Hodge here. So Falcons had two people that earned the right to the Pro Bowl, and that was the right guard, Chris Lindstrom, and Kadarrell Hodge. For the first time, he is receiving that honor. So obviously it goes without saying.
Yeah, as a wide receiver, he gets, an average grade, whatever an average grade would be. As a player, he gets an A because as a special teams player, he had two blocks in one game. Dude was off the rails phenomenal in the special teams. He also made the play on the fake punt that Tampa tried. He's the one that came down and made that block. He won a game for you against Tampa the other at home. So he, as a player overall, he gets an A from me. As a receiver, though, I give him an average grade.
You can just tell he's that guy. And we had a couple of these guys. Eric Weems, Anton Smith. Like, he was that guy you leaned into as far as being a special teams ace and a guy you knew you could count on offensively when their number was put at the bat. And you mentioned he's average grade, middle of the road. Again, it goes back to what is Kadarius Hodge being asked to do? What's the lid on what Kadarius Hodge is? And what role was he put in? So I'm having a hard time giving him anything other than A because it seemed like, and this last week was a prime example, when he's put up to bat, he's making exceptional plays.
We'll touch on Ray-Ray McCloud and the quarterbacks at the top of the hour. But when we come back here on the morning shift, can Texas's defense slow down that high-powered Ohio State offense? The college football playoff, well, the semifinals, they start tomorrow night. We will be right back here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
And it goes too far. Clint gets it back, though. Now they throw it underneath the tray. Out to DeAndre Hunter. A three. It's good. DeAndre Hunter just hit the three with under 2 minutes to go. DeAndre's got 14 points. 1:53, clock ticking. Hawks up by three.
That was a big hit by DeAndre Hunter, and that was Steve Holman on the call of a Hawks win, 124-121 over the Utah Jazz, and that win courtesy of Trae Young hitting a buzzer-beating three-pointer from beyond half court to give them that W.
Yeah, DeAndre Hunter continues to be a force offensively off the bench, 17 points again last night. Had his struggles defensively, as did a lot of the Hawks. And I think one of the things, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, one of the things I think we're learning about the Hawks is they're not good without Jalen on the floor, especially when you have a guy like Lauri Markkanen that's on offense, that's a 7-footer that can hit from deep, that goes for 35 last night. Markkanen, by the way, ding, is not interested in anybody else's point total other than his own. Like, watching him take control of the ball last night, he's either going to the hole or he's shooting it. Like, he ain't dishing anything. Like, he's the complete opposite of what Trae Young is at this point.
Sounds like Steak when he played in JCC. Ball!
I mean,
ball!
Dude, Dylan, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm watching Markkanen last night, and he's like, dude, he's either pulling, like, what? How many assists did he have last night?
Or couldn't. Dylan in his
role, actually. 35 points, one assist for Markkanen last night.
Dylan, like, is that what you did?
Like,
No. I'm definitely a mover of the ball. Now, I shoot when I can shoot. By the way, ding. Real quick. I actually had a buzzer beater in my league last night.
Wait,
a game-winning buzzer beater. Oh. Yeah. Now it wasn't
a
half
just
court
now
shot.
Bringing it up?
Yeah. You and Trey Twinkies.
Yeah. I mean, you know, me and Trey, one and the same.
You're our own little Trey Young. Hey,
you
when you talk about DeAndre Hunter, do you know dude's averaging 5 points a game more than he this year than he has in his career? And now look, talk about coming off the bench and all that crap. He's only averaging three less minutes.
Yeah.
A game. It's fun. It's amazing. I don't know what his. It's like a. It, you know, you talk about the Space Jam where the Monstars took over. It's like someone took someone else and put him in DeAndre's
body.
Yeah.
No, it is funny too because DeAndre is a guy that I think the Hawks have probably been very open about the last couple of years, trying to possibly trade, use his trade bait.
Well, they haven't John Collins'd him, but they have been very much like, if you want him.
Yeah, they're not hiding it.
Yeah.
And it's funny, at this point, it seems like he's a guy they can't lose with Jalen's health kind of been in and out. I mean, you started Vete Krejci last night.
Well, look, here's the deal. Are you paying? First off, NBA numbers are bloated no matter what. Like, the ninth guy off the bench is making guaranteed, like, $12 million a year, okay? So it just sounds weird when you think about it. But you're able to start – kind of build some depth for this team, and it's why you feel better about the team than you have in past. See, in the past years when you'd be 19, 18, you'd be like, yeah, but – if one guy gets hurt, you know, seven-game losing streak,
here we
come.
You haven't wavered in your optimism this year yet.
No, I haven't, and they're still doing, you know, the things they do. If we're talking about, I think our first year of existence in this show, our season with the Hawks, it was like win one, lose one, win one, lose one, win one, lose one. This year, it's win three, lose three, win three, lose three. And Mike Conte nailed it yesterday. And so, but it just feels like the highs have been higher this year, and the lows have been higher this year. Like, they haven't been as – the lows haven't been as low, and the highs haven't been as mid, if that
makes sense.
Any sense. Well, that now, doesn't even sound like it makes sense saying
yeah,
it, so
I
got to preference that.
And look, they're in the middle of a long – they were in a two-week road trip. They started, obviously, with a big win against Toronto, back in December, and then they lost three straight, to your point. And had the back-to-back double dip in L.A. Against the Clippers and the Lakers. And then you go on Utah. They were 5-point favorites in this game last night. and it felt like they had to win. They're 5-point favorites. It's probably the most winnable of the entire, what, six games, because they got Phoenix. They got Phoenix tomorrow night. So it was, you're watching it, and you're realizing that Jalen's out. Lauri Markkanen's doing whatever he wants to do against the Hawks defense. And, you know, Trae Young continues to struggle from 3-point. He hit one from 49 foot, and it was the one that mattered. But he still is not shooting well from deep. I noticed him a couple of times last night dribbling in and out of traffic. And not – look, I don't pretend to know all the techniques around shooting threes, but not really getting his feet set and planted to be able to put up a 3-point shot. And he continues to struggle with that. I think he was 3-for-10 from deep last night. So Dyson Daniels obviously is kind of what's holding this team together at times like these and keeping them close defensively. But they just they weren't good defensively last night. You did just enough and got just enough points off the bench last night and had some clutch plays. And the 49-footer at the end, obviously the dagger, it was number one on SportsCenter this morning, man. So a lot of people taking notice of that.
Let's get a check on some college football. The college football playoff semifinals kick off tomorrow night, and it starts with number 6 Penn State against number 7 Notre Dame. And then on Friday, you have 5 Texas and 8 Ohio State. So let's just go ahead and push ahead to Friday just for a minute here with Texas and Ohio State. And we talked a lot about just how both of these teams with Ohio State, their offense look like probably what they should have looked like all season in their quarterfinals game. Texas has their times at offense where it seems like they're rolling and then Bo Hughes or they kind of hit a bit of a lull. But defensively, both of these two teams are pretty tough.
Yeah, this is on paper the best defense that Ohio State's going to face in the playoff so far.
Yeah.
And maybe overall, maybe all year.
I hit you with some quick stats real fast. Ohio State, when you're talking about defense, the offensive points per game, they are first, and then Texas is fourth in the FBS this season.
Yeah, and you go and you look at kind of what Ohio, you mentioned their offense. They're averaging 41.5 points in their two games.
I'm sorry, that was defense with opponent. Yes.
But you mentioned Ohio State's offense hitting their stride in the quarter. They did it in the I don't know what you call it, the first round, I guess, as well, where they just destroyed what I thought was a very good Tennessee defense as well. And so but you look at what Texas has done as a defense, and they allowed they allowed Cade Klubnik to throw for almost 340 yards and 3 touchdowns against them in the first round.
Yeah.
But then they really stifled Skidaboo at times, Tiff, and then he just kind of hit another gear. When, to your point, when Texas went in an offensive lull was when Arizona State and Skidaboo kind of got their footing. And then he ran for almost 150, a couple of touchdowns, had a big receiving play, then threw a freaking touchdown on top of it.
That was your offensive MVP. That was your MVP of the game.
Yeah.
That was the first time in, I forget how long, like decades, since the MVP was from the losing team.
Yeah, and it was cool. It was really cool seeing the Peach Bowl come to the, you know, Texas is on the field celebrating. They're in their own press conference and at the, you know, in the press room, and they've got to come over to him at the table while he's doing that. And I thought it was cool. The matchup for me is Jade Barron of Texas, who won the Jim Thorpe Award this year, versus this is where it gets weird for me. He's only 5'11", 190.
Okay.
Against this,
it's your
freshman,
average college corner, I think.
This freshman phenom in Jeremiah Smith, who has really just been found all of a sudden in a lot of ways in the playoff, who's 6'3", 215. So basically it's Julio versus Desmond Trufant.
Yeah. And it's weird because you really have, to your point about Jeremiah Smith, he's been a guy that's been a dude all along, but on the national scene he's finally making those exceptional plays. And a lot of people are obviously paying attention to Ohio State. It's strange. I think that's a good matchup. I think it will be a good matchup. I think Texas has one of the best defensive lines, if not the best defensive line in the country, especially at this point. The problem is there's two. I look at this matchup. I'm like, oh, Texas defense line is going to go there, man. They're gonna absolutely, you know, be able to run through Ohio State. That's gonna be the big issue. Nobody's paying attention to it. But the issue is that Oregon and Tennessee both have really good defensive lines, and that didn't seem to be an issue. Not only that, but to both of y'all's point about the Scataboo thing, that really didn't play a factor either. So, I mean, you're looking at some of these things where Texas has these strengths, and you feel like, of course, Texas, you know, from what you've seen out of them, when they play well, they play very well. The problem for Texas right now is nobody is playing better than Ohio State. And it still blows my mind when we go back just a few weeks and watched Ohio State play Michigan, how that game played out. I mean, that is, if there was ever a commercial for rivalry week creating havoc and chaos, that was the one. Because I still don't know how that game panned out, but it's going to be a good one, man. I think this is probably of the two. I'm looking forward to the playmakers of this one. And then the other game, the Orange Bowl, the Notre Dame-Penn State, I'm looking forward to the lines of scrimmages, the front sevens, the run game. So I think it's going to be interesting to see, watch all those things really kind of play out.
But Mike, since you mentioned Oregon and Tennessee, both those teams that Ohio State knocked off to get here, you talked about how their defense was really good. When you look at Will Howard, 74.5% completion percentage, 315 passing yards, 5 touchdowns to 1 interception in those 2 games combined.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, too. Will Howard kind of asked yesterday, you know, about the buildup to the game and about playing Texas. Remember, this is a guy that was at Kansas State for a little bit and has had a number of shots against Texas, took him to overtime a couple of times, and he didn't shy away from it. He was like, look, I'm excited to get another opportunity, get another crack at this team because I haven't been able to, you know, to really kind of spread his wings, I guess. And so kind of seeing his reaction to that. Seeing that, you know, as how he's at Ohio State now, but he's asked about his time at Kansas State and playing Texas and everything like that. He didn't shy away from it. He said, yeah, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to get another crack at this team.
Before we go, here are some other college football headlines. Georgia lands Texas A&M wide receiver Noah Thomas from the transfer portal. Thoughts?
I don't think there's any doubt that the wide receiver position at Georgia you've got to hit on these transfer portal guys. You got to. You needed playmakers last year, and then all of a sudden you've had an offense that seems like it's being gutted a little bit from guys leaving, going to the NFL, and you got to hit on those guys. Got to hit on the portal guys this year for Kirby Smart.
Big kid, too. He's 6'6", 200 pounds, so he's a big target for Puglisi or Gunnar Stockton or quarterback to be named later. I don't know. Real quick, you talking about transfers real quick? Don't forget the underlying story is where Quinn Ewers started his career.
I forgot about that. We haven't heard about that at all.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, don't forget about that. That was when he had that mullet
business
haircut.
Decision.
Yeah, that was what his
Texas
hair
wouldn't let him get NIL money before he was 18 or whatever.
Yeah. But
he's
yeah,
like, I'm out.
Georgia's got to rebuild that wide receiver room because Arian Smith's gone, and hopefully Noah Thomas has less drops than Arian Smith next year.
Boise State's running back, Ashton Gentry, a Heisman Trophy candidate, he declares for the NFL draft. Not surprised by this, and I'm sure he's going to have a lot of interest now that we have revived the running back position through Saquon Barkley and Derrick Henry.
Yeah, that was like one of those formalities. That was like, you know, that he was going to get. That's for sure. That's like, who else can you think of? Like Jalen Walker saying, yeah, I'm going to go pro. No kidding. You're a star.
And it's funny because you never know these days with the JUCO rules of Diego Pavia and also the COVID year. You never know who has eligibility left. Like, well, everybody has eligibility left.
I think if Ashton Gentry was at an SEC school, he might have or a Power 4 school. Yeah. The money might be there to keep him from going pro.
That's a good point.
And quickly here, ahead of Notre Dame's game tomorrow, running back Jeremiah Love, he is expected to be ready for the Orange Bowl against Penn State after practicing this week. So he did deal with a knee injury that he re-aggravated in the third quarter of their Sugar Bowl win over Georgia.
He is their leading rusher. It is a two-headed monster there. But Jeremiah Love is their bread and butter guy. Had over 1,000 yards this year and 16 touchdowns. So he is the dude when it comes to that. And it's really their running game is a three-headed monster with Leonard mixed in there.
Yeah, I think we said it just a minute ago. This is a game that you feel like is going to be played, maybe not between the tackles, I don't want to say that, but let's just call it between the tight ends. This game is going to be played between the tight ends. So that ought to be interesting to watch, and obviously that's a big get for them moving forward.
The college football playoff continues Thursday and Friday, and on Friday, Dukes and Bell will be breaking down all the action at Twin Peaks in Kennesaw. Make sure to come down there and join them Friday from 2 to 7 for a special college football preview show brought to you by Dos Equis. Go for Dos. It's all at Twin Peaks in Kennesaw on Friday for those guys. All right, up next, offseason grades for the Falcons quarterbacks. We'll be right back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.